Marty Morrissey on RTE Radio 1.
To be honest with you. Anyway, I missed my cue. Back in the early 70s, a Trinity College graduate started his musical career by strumming a guitar in a corner of Captain America's in Grafton Street. Since then, he has recorded dozens of albums and had many, many hits, the most famous of them, of course, being The Lady in Red from 1986. His latest album is The Hands of Man, and Krista Berg joins me now in studio ahead of a concert in Dublin's Borgash Energy Theatre on the 6th of May. But let's start with a tune from that album. This is There Goes My Heart Again.
There goes my heart again, lost in the dark again. One touch, a crowded room, the whisper of her name. How could a simple kiss turn me upside down like this? There goes my heart again, I'm losing it over you. So many people say, don't lose your heart again. But look, what could I do when lightning strikes this way? She took me by surprise with that something special in her eyes. There goes my heart again, I'm losing it over you. I've done my time in the prison of love, and just when they let me out, inside again.
Inside again. Ah.
We're singing it live here in the studio, Chris.
A simple kiss, turn me upside down like this. There goes my heart again, I'm losing it over you, Marty.
Yeah. Yeah. That is live, Krista Berg. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for inviting me onto your show.
Well, can I return the compliment? Because I know you're bombarded with media requests, but thank you for honouring us here, coming onto the programme.
Thank you very much.
We're delighted
to have
you.
And I'd like to have this opportunity to say hello to my mother who's listening. And I called her in great excitement yesterday afternoon just after Hurricane Fly pulled off that incredible victory.
It was pretty impressive
extraordinary performance. Extraordinary, yeah. Yeah.
For an 11-year-old.
My mother or the horse?
The horse, Chris, I can assure you.
Yes, the horse.
Now, let me start there, because you've often spoken about your childhood and a difficult enough relationship with your dad, I believe.
Well, I think it's a pretty common thing. And what I've done, certainly with my three children, is attempt to be super dad and you know, really affectionate, and reversing what I think was very much possibly a post-Victorian thing. And then sort of end of the Second World War, when a lot of people, you know, it was difficult times. And I suppose with my dad, it was exacerbated by going to boarding school. And you had one authority figure for 13 weeks. Like, I went to Marlborough College in England for my secondary school, and coming back again for 2 weeks, and suddenly there's a different authority figure. So, but, you know, we certainly patched everything up towards the end of his life. And I remember I was driving to the K Club one day and trying to hit some golf balls there. And I turned on the radio, and Michael the Mechanics was playing their song, The Living Years. And it hit me like a train. And I had to stop the car because I just couldn't see with the tears in my eyes. Because it's basically, these things happen with songs, you know, they really hit you. And I've been fortunate to write a few that have really had that effect on people as well.
And in the effect of the song kind of obviously welled up the relationship you had with your dad. And I mean, what was his reaction when you then rang him and told him that? What did you say to him?
Well, I didn't. I was actually down in Wexford, where the family home is, and near Tom Haggard, an old castle. Very cold, I can assure you. When we moved in, there was no furniture, no heat, no light, and no water. And we sort of camped. But with my dad, I just hugged him and I told him I loved him, and it was a big moment, you know. I think it's that rapprochement that you have to have. You have to, as it says in the song, it's no point waiting until they've gone to say what you really have to say. And I've repeated this in a couple of songs that I've written, actually. One was called A Son and the Father, for example. Say what you need to say, because these days go past very quickly.
Well, do you know what we'd like to do is play a little bit of Mike and the Mechanics and that moment of you and your dad.
Thank you. Singer. And I had the pleasure of recording. I did two albums called Footsteps, which were my favourite songs, and a couple of my own ones. And the second Footsteps album, I recorded The Living Years as a homage to basically to Mike and the Mechanics, who I know, Mike Rutherford, and also the Scotsman who wrote the lyric, whose name temporarily escapes me. But Paul Carrick, the singer, I mean, it's a fantastic song. And I remember when I attempted to do the vocals, because I sang live with the band, I just got too choked up. And they came out, come on, just relax, relax. Because when I sing in the studio, I put a picture in my head. It's a very strong, I have a very strong visual imagination, going back to Spanish Train and Spaceman Came Travelling and all that, and Patricia, of course. For the living years, I had this picture of my father and sitting outside in the sunshine, and I just couldn't get past that. It was a blockage. But then I recorded it, and I think I made a very good version of it.
You certainly did. I remember listening to it. In terms of, you know, listening to that now and bringing back to your dad, if I could just dwell on your dad, because your dad was a World War II soldier, and I don't think he particularly enjoyed that life.
Hated it.
Yeah.
And like so many soldiers coming back from war, very rarely talked about it. But having spent 4 years behind the Japanese lines in Burma as a sabotage expert, he must have seen some horrors that just you and I can't even imagine.
Would that have explained in a way, Chris, you know, why he was maybe cold or over authoritative with you, and why in a way you are the one that had to go to him, put your arms around him, tell him that you loved him, that it wasn't coming from him, you know, what he'd seen, his life experiences in World War II.
I certainly understand from talking to my mother that he was a different man before the war, and he volunteered, and his first posting was on a ship which was torpedoed, and then he volunteered for Special Operations Executive, SOE, and, you know, spent those 4 years behind the lines and survived. And I think that the trauma, I'd say there's a lot of people listening right now whose maybe parents have been through that. And indeed, subsequently, and I urge everybody who feels the way that I felt, just get pick up the phone or you know, we have so many ways now of contacting our families, WhatsApp and Facebook. And I was just mentioning it in the break there about Facebook. You know, I have a Facebook page with nearly 500,000 people on it, and I constantly interact with it. And the other night, on Saturday night, it said, everybody have a good Saturday night. And within seconds, I had people from New Zealand, Australia, Iran, America, Argentina, Russia coming on. And, you know, so we are in a world of connectivity, and I think it's really important to remain connected in a way that was impossible. Do you remember in the old days you had to write a letter? Ringing home was Tom Haggard 3 was the number, and you got through to the exchange and they said, no, he's not here, he's actually away at the moment. You know, they'd know everything.
Did you reverse the charges, Chris?
I
you know
did
the way
my best.
You say,
I did
can
my
I reverse
best.
The charges, please? I'm you, Bridget Kildare. That was
that's
me.
True,
yeah.
That's true.
It's an amazing way we've come. I remember when I was a kid, I'm giving away my own age now, but I remember you'd have to give the phone a good twirl and then pick
exactly.
it up. And could we ask for Dublin? Whatever it is, whatever the number was. And it's like considering where we're at now, that's not that long ago.
No, it's not. Well, I bought my first apartment, obviously with a mortgage, in 1978 and got married to Diane. And we applied for a telephone. And the answer was, yes, you can have a phone. It'll take 4 years. Yeah, you may laugh.
Are you
4 years. We were on a list. It would take 4 years to get a landline telephone. And I then went to California for 6 months to do some writing and working with the band that I was supporting at the time, Supertramp. And I rang up to get a phone, or at least I went down to the whatever it was to get a phone. They said, "We're real sorry, sir. It'll have to be this afternoon." Yeah. Well, that's fine. Fine with me.
Bit of a difference from that in 4 years, yeah. I have to say. The text lines are hopping. My producer today, Pat O'Mahony, who's an expert, I have to say, on music, but also Shane, has told me that B.A. Robertson.
That's B.A. Mm-hmm. Brian Robertson. In fact, he was another guy that I knew quite well because his children went to the same school as B.A. Robertson, yeah. And yeah, great lyric.
And we also have got, what does Chris think of the sad passing of the legendary Demis Roussos? This is from Wild Jimmy in Outer Offaly, which is an unusual tagline or tag.
Indeed.
Name.
I'm very sorry to hear about Demis. I didn't know that.
Yes, he passed away.
Must have been very recently.
I'm not too sure when. It was today, this morning,
was
I
it?
Think, yeah.
We had a voice of an angel, forever and ever. Remember that song?
Yes.
Yeah.
Ever and ever and ever and ever. Well, wherever you are in heaven, dear fellow, I hope that you're singing for the angels right now.
I'm sure he is. And we all pass on our sympathies, sad news about Demi Roussos. And I really love the lyrics in Chris's song, The Girl with April in Her Eyes, and The Tower. That's coming in from Jim in Kilkenny.
Oh, thanks, Jim.
Text lines are hopping. We'll have more from Chris de Burgh after this.
Marty Morrissey on RTE Radio 1.
loads of texts, Chris de Burgh. My gosh, Chris de Burgh is amazing. I saw him in Killarney in 2008. Just magical, says Nessa. Chris, I wrote to you in 1988 while serving in South Lebanon to come out and perform for the troops, but unfortunately it just wasn't possible. It just didn't happen. I absolutely love your music and find it an inspiration, says Mike.
That's very kind. In fact, if I can just jump in here, Mike, as you know, the civil war was going on there in Lebanon, and it was absolutely dreadful. Many people killed and displaced. And I was invited, in fact, to perform in Beirut just towards the very end of the civil war. It's still a dangerous place to be. But I went there with my band in 1993, and we did two shows up, I think it was up in the hills of West Beirut. And even to get there, you're going through many, many checkpoints and UN soldiers in the backstage area and various other people walking around with their Kalashnikovs or whatever they had. And there were 20,000 people each night, young people mainly, and the gratitude for actually making the effort to perform in Beirut was incredible. It was awesome. It was goosebump time. And I've been back to Beirut many times, performing, for example, the year before last in the city, and doing a lot of television. There's one show that they have, sort of reality show, which is watched by 120 million people around the Arab world, and I've done that quite a few. Called Star Academy, and there's some very talented people there. I love the people of Lebanon, and I'm sure, Mike, that you would have found the same thing. Very open, very generous, very kind people.
The words of Chris de Burgh. Love, Chris. I got 9 of his albums on vinyl for Christmas a few years ago. Legend, says Paul.
What a Christmas.
Say hello to Chris for me. Myself and a friend bumped into Chris de Burgh concert in the RDS back in 1989 or 90. We were only 13 or 14. Great gig. Sorry for bunking in. Thanks, says Starboy. Were you at that concert?
Yes, in fact, when I heard you were coming on today, I was saying, I remember you did a run in the RDS. It might have been 10 or 12 concerts in a row.
I think we did 12. I think it was a record, yeah.
And I was about 12 or 13. Yeah. And we were just to start in secondary school. And myself and my cousin got tickets. And you were the first ever kind of big stadium concert that I ever went to. So it was very much like a rite of passage.
Yeah.
You know, when you go up and you're, well, especially if you're coming up from the country and you're going up to Dublin, you're going in without a parent and you're up there in the crowd and you come on and everybody's singing along and you go back to the school and they're all going, what's it like? What's it like? You're so cool. So you were my rite of passage, Chris.
Oh, thank you very much.
Whether you wanted me to be or not.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, in fact, I'm still doing a lot of concerts. Last year, about 70, 80 around the world, and I've got a big European tour coming up this spring. And I can tell you the energy levels are still very high. I've been having the pleasure recently of going through a whole lot of old tracks to decide what to do for the next tour. I still hit those nights and Don't Play the Ferryman, A High on Emotion and Spanish Train. And
do you have
all
to do Patricia the Stripper at every concert?
No. We very rarely do it, actually. There's a few places like Montreal, they love it. And doing the Royal Albert Hall, the first time I played the Albert Hall was, I think I've done it about 18, 16 times now. But anyway, there was this. We had a stripper on called Jane who really shouldn't have taken all those clothes off. All those people in the Albert Hall were absolutely horrified, you know? But it was funny.
Marty Morrissey on RTE Radio 1.
Nadia Ford is with us in London, Nadia. And again, come back to your growing celebrity and stardom, because everybody got to know you initially, of course, as a model. Are you going to stay modelling?
The thing about modelling is it's actually not too far from what I'm doing now. I still, have a calendar out every year, and I still, I just shot a shoot for FHM, and it's still, related. In campaigns, or if you're doing, even if you're shooting a music video, you still kind of have to know certain bits that you've learned from modeling. So it's never too far away. It's just now it's not 100% my job where it was when I was a teenager. But I've learned it's like acting. When I'm up there on stage, it's not how I am off stage. I would probably be very confident and stuff up on stage, and I'm quite shy off it. So it's just the same. It's all related in a weird way, so.
Usually, unfortunately, when you have a glamorous young woman, indeed, it doesn't have to be a young woman, indeed, making waves in modelling, can happen to men as well, in fashion, in television, in music, the cynics really are not too far behind, are they, Nadia? How do you deal with that?
Well, I, do you know what? I've I just don't let it get to me anymore. I've definitely heard it, everything, and you know, there's not much more that can be said in the last few years, you know, and I just think that you have to, like, obviously I get to see some of it online on Twitter or whatever, it might pop up on my feed and I'm like, oh, that's not a very nice thing to say, but I think when you put yourself out there, you need to be ready for that. And when you're putting yourself out there on a, you know, in a public forum, you're stupid to think that it's not going to happen. So I'm prepared for it. And, you know, and of course, I'm sure there was people that were like, that girl, you know, who does that? Mm. She doesn't sing. But anybody who's close to me and has known me for years and years understands that it's something that I've loved all my life, and that I'm just blessed that I'm in a situation that I'm actually getting to do it now. And I really did not think I would ever get a chance to do it. Like, I remember doing Panto a few years ago and I was getting to sing a couple of songs and I just was like, whoa, this is so good. This is what I love to do, you know? And I couldn't believe, I had been booked more for The Girl in the Papers than I had been for my voice. And all of a sudden I was doing the opposite. I was there singing four or five songs every night and I was like, God, I love this, you know? So, I'm just lucky that I'm really, really blessed that I've been brought back around to what I love to do. Obviously, I don't love going into the jungle and, you know, eating crocodile every night. And
No, it wouldn't be something I'd like to do myself, I have to say. But we'll come to that in a moment, Natty. I have to ask you about that. But just on that point, Chris, do you get much flack as well?
Oh, sure. I was going to say that to Nadia. It goes with the game, you know.
Yeah.
And if you are strong in yourself and you know who you are, it's like when Rosie won Miss World. You know, I just basically said, you're the glamorous girl out there, like Nadia, you know. But the person you really are is the one who's at home with, you know, and you're slopping around in your slippers and stuff. But the thing is, if you know who you are, and it's a phrase that I've come across, if you love yourself then there's plenty left for everybody else, and you just have to deflect all those nasty things. I've had years of it, and you know, one of the problems ironically was having a huge hit called Lady in Red, and I ran into your man who sang You're Beautiful recently. What's his name?
James Blunt.
Exactly.
James Blunt. Mm-hmm.
And
correct answer, Nadia. Yes, you're up.
We had a good laugh because we're very similar in that respect. We both had a very major hit, and in my case it was people completely ignoring the rock songs that I had that I mentioned earlier, like Ferryman, Don't Break the Ferryman, and High in Emotion. But if you don't like Lady in Red, you don't like the artist at all.
Mm.
Like the 24 albums that I've recorded, whatever it is. So so Nadia, all I'd say to you is that if you're being strong in yourself and you completely ignore, I mean, these people wouldn't say that to your face, that's for
no,
sure.
No, they don't. That's
absolutely
the funny thing. They
no.
don't. They don't. It's more online and stuff.
It's the coward's way of insulting. So ignore them. That's what I do.
Part of the territory.
Part of the territory. Well, I think we'd all love, and I'm sure Nadia would as well, because Nadia is going to stay with us for a little while, because we've loads to talk to Nadia about. But I think we'd love to hear another song from the new album, Christopher.
Well, thank you. You've chosen this one, which I actually wrote, ironically, in about 5 minutes. It's just one of those things that came pouring out. It's not often I write about personal things, but certainly in the first section of this, it's about me and my wife, Diane, in the early years. And I think it's a blueprint for many other people who've come to this stage in their lives when the children have all grown up. You know, the dream of right from the start of having kids, and then they've grown up and they've left home. And it's just the two of you again, in spite of all the things that are going on. Other people are leaving each other and, the dramas of life as it stands. And this is called Where Would I Be?
Sundays down the road from our very first home and see the little children playing, wondering if we would have our own. And now we've had our lovely family grown up and gone away, and there is something that I've always meant to say. Where would I be without your love? How can I sleep without your touch? How would it be if I were living on my own without you?
walked in days of darkness. You were always there with a light for me. And down the years there have been so many changes. Friends have parted, chasing dreams. But we're still here and there are no regrets for tears along the way. And there is something that I've always meant to say. Where would I be without your love? How can I sleep without your touch? How would it be if I were living on my own? Without you. We're still here and there are no regrets for tears along the way. And this is something that I've always meant to say. Where would I be without your love? How can I sleep without your touch? How would it be if I
Marty Morrissey, weekdays from 3 p.m, RTE Radio 1.
Have to say, I love that song, Chris.
I'm starting a campaign, Marty.
Go on, you start your campaign.
Is there any chance you do it for the Eurovision, Chris, or would that be below you now?
I must tell you a funny. No, I can't actually.
Go
it all involves somebody
on.
From
Marty.
Marty
and
oh,
Nadia,
well, this is years and years and years ago. I got a call from somebody from a radio station not too unadjacent to where I'm sitting right now and said, Chris, would you be interested in writing for the old Eurovision? And I said, oh. I said, well, it might be a bit embarrassing if I sort of lose the national song contest. He said, well, you won't, you see, because you'll write all six of the songs. I said, no, I haven't got time, sorry. But it was a bit like the Father Ted, you know that one?
Well, loads of texts coming in. I remember Chris, when he started singing on the cabaret scene, he was and still is one of the greatest live performers that we have ever had in this country. All the best from Doug, from Douglas.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
I first met Chris de Burgh in 1976. Before he made it big, he was doing a gig for Polydor Records in the Still Organ Hotel just down the road, and I was there. Mm. I spoke to him afterwards, wondering how he didn't have a hit record yet. That's Liam McDermott in Racool.
That was, 76. I just released Spanish Train and Other Stories. And that was the classic second album syndrome, you know, trying to come out with a really good record. And I really managed to. And the Spanish Train has become iconic, I think, not only in Ireland, but in a lot of countries around the world. Multi-platinum in Canada, for example. I just kind of got lucky. And if I can just take the opportunity to mention a young man that I met when he was about 13 or 14, went to the same school as my son, Michael. And there was a very nice group of about four or five of these guys used to come to my house for sleepovers and, you know, have fun and watch movies and so on. And his name is Andrew Hosier Byrne. And summer before last, Andrew was round and we were having a barbecue. And I said, right, you're claiming to be a bit of a singer here. Here's a guitar, go on. And he just blew me away. And immediately I just, whoa, this is a star. And I remember calling everybody and I said, listen to this young fella. And I'm absolutely thrilled for him and his success. But that second album is going to be really important to you, Andrew. And I wish you all the best because you are, I say this to everybody. I hear so many people who are sort of wannabes and stuff literally from all over the world. And he is the first person I heard in 10 years that really, I went, wow. He sang a couple of songs live at Rosanna's wedding in the summer. It was like me watching myself all those years ago pick up a guitar and sing. And my goodness, this man is, he's got something
and
really special.
And very grounded as well, Chris.
Lovely fella.
Really nice guy.
Fella.
Yeah.
Nadia, are you moving to London permanently or is this just a visit?
No, I'm kind of here at the moment actually, but I'm back. I just got some details to come back early February, so I was like, yay for work. So I love coming back to Dublin so much, and I love getting to come home to Ireland and get to work a little bit over there. And I think it's important to still work at home, because as much as I'm working in other countries now, there's nothing better than going home and getting to be around the people who are like you and stuff. So I'm living here in London at the moment, but I do get to go home frequently. And I was there for Hozier singing. That was incredible.
Yeah, he's good.
Oh my God. I think you could hear a pin drop in the room. It was unbelievable.
At that wedding.
Amazing. Yeah. Yeah, he's so amazing. He is so amazing.
The thing is, what I thought was funny, Nadia, is that he was walking around, big, tall, lanky lad, beforehand, and nobody knew who he was. And then you saw there was two standing ovations, and right after that, everybody rushed up to him, because this is a very serious world class talent.
It was incredible, and it was like him, a mic and a guitar. That's it.
Wow.
That's it.
Sheer raw talent.
That's
the way. And again, I keep on thinking of my early years. I used to go out and tour just with a guitar in front of bands like Supertramp and Eddie Money, and just one guy with a guitar. And you learn that way. You learn the hard knocks, and you put yourself out there and you're very exposed and vulnerable. But, I wish him luck. I really think he's special.
Marty Morrissey on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah. Nadia, what are you doing on Friday afternoon?
I'm just thinking I need to move something off my schedule so I can fly back to Dublin and have the party with you guys.
Well, we'd love to have you too, Nadia, I can assure you. But anyway, what's it like moving? I know you're not that far away, because so many people have to immigrate for work to Australia or America. But do you like London? Is it difficult to move from home?
It definitely took me a couple of months to settle in here. I was in LA last year as well, working on, that was kind of the beginning of the music journey for me, was Los Angeles last year, and now with London, just because this is really where the management are, so I kind of have to be here. And it didn't happen overnight. It took me a couple of months. I made a good group of mates, a couple of Irish people, and I think once I kind of got, kind of having my own life here, that's when I really settled in, where it did take me at least 6 months last year. Yeah, it's not easy. Especially I'm such a home bird. Like, I love Ireland so much, and I love being able to go home and see my family and my friends. And like, when I was home over Christmas, I was home for about 2 weeks, and every single day it was like breakfast, lunch, dinner with different people, just trying to catch up with everyone,
Yeah.
And I'm so excited even just to go back in February. I just miss it. There's nothing like Ireland, and when you're away, you realise that, and you realise how special a country it is, you really do. And I'm not I'm not trying to get all patriotic, but it's true.
Nadia, I did the same as you. I spent a lot of my early time trying to get into the music business living in London, and it always seemed to me that Sundays were the most awful. Everybody
a lot loneliness.
I just want to mention, I got a song on my new album called, it's called Big City Sundays. It's about people leaving Ireland and going away, and that feeling that your friends are in the pub or back home, and it's the sadness, and it's okay, you're convincing yourself that you're doing something amazing, and it's there's a whole new territory and a whole new world out there. But for some reason, Sundays, you'd kind of,
it is. Sundays are the worst. Yeah. It's so true, because everyone kind of goes to like their families on Sundays.
That's right, yeah.
So that's what, when I got my good group of friends here, it made it all the difference.
It's back to the GA matches again on the championship, Nadia. That offer is there.
And do you know what?
I'll just fly back for Sundays.
Yeah. Chris also has a song on his album called Empty Rooms, and we were talking about it earlier, and I found it fascinating as well. Speaking of kind of, I suppose, being a little bit lonely as well. Can you explain that one? Because I think a lot of people who are listening to the programme today will have experienced what you're talking about.
Well, as a songwriter, I think what I should be doing is writing about what I'm thinking about right now, not trying to pretend I'm 30 years younger writing pop songs. So Empty Rooms was really walking into my children's rooms, Rosanna, Hubie and Mike. And Mike's now working in London. Rosanna's married, as you know, and Hubie's still around making wonderful, interesting niche music, sort of electronic stuff. But going into the rooms and you've had them, little children growing up, and suddenly they've gone. And it's quite a thing to look into the bedroom and see the favourite toys on the bed and the teddy bears that were so loved. And they've gone. And it's just reality, you know. And I've played this song to quite a few people who are similar to me and Diane, that their children have moved out. And it affects you. And it's very moving, you know.
Yeah, it must be difficult. I'm just thinking there. I mean, I suppose we all leave home. But we never think, because we have to pursue our love and our passion, whatever it is, like what Nadia is doing now, moving to London. Yeah. But I presume it is difficult for the people who are left behind. We never think of it, really.
We should never worry. You know, for the children, we should never let them know how we're feeling, because it's their brave new world, not ours. I certainly didn't look back when I left home.
Marty Morrissey on RTE Radio 1.
Even Chris is going to play and sing one more song from your album.
Well, so far you've played the There Goes My Heart Again, a rather cheery thing, and then you've played Where Would I Be. The next song is slightly more serious in content, but I, like many, many other people around the world, believe that every woman has the right to education, right to a life of dignity, to wear what they wish to wear, what clothes, without being told what to do by men. And I wrote this song a couple of years ago, in particular, thinking of that young girl, Malala, who got the Nobel Prize recently for being, you know, shot for being an activist for children's education. So this is called, it's one of those stories that I create. It's about a woman who's in a prison, but it's called The Keeper of the Keys.
I hear her voice, she calls to me. I know she's near, but I cannot see. Through prison walls that come between her dreams of freedom and the real world, where her face is never seen. All the king's horses and all his men are fearful. Changes there that can be found, and far away I hear a distant sound. It's rolling like thunder. Always there for them to have and hold and wear.
and Krista Borg there with, I think, what will be another smashing hit.
Brilliant.
From his new album. Krista, we're bombarded with texts, so many texts coming in, but thank you indeed for joining us today, and indeed Nadia Ford in London.
Marty Morrissey on RTE Radio 1.